Hello, welcome to the podcast for Freelance Chi, issue 9 for December 12th, 2014. So something interesting happens, you know, around this time every year. It's typically December, but sometimes it happens in November. But I start to kind of rush to like get all my own like internal personal projects completed before the year ends. I haven't quite figured out if it's because I want to get everything done like this year, or if I just happen to have extra time around, you know, this month just to get everything wrapped up. But just in the past week, I finished my Run Your Consulting Business training, which is going to be the last one for 2014, and thinking about doing some changes to it next year. And then I'm about halfway through kind of redoing all of my course services and making them more like a productized consulting type setup, which has been I've been working on it for about a month, but I've had this kind of idea in the back of my head for a couple of years now. So it's nice to kind of like start moving these things forward and getting it out. Really good thing is, you know, hopefully next year I'm going to have a lot more free time. Like with these big projects knocked out, I'll be able to either pick up something new or, you know, have personal time or maybe even take up some more clients, stuff like that. A lot of content today. So first one is from Curtis McCall. It's the problem with pricing calculators. You've probably seen these. These are those, you know, the it's like a single page, has like usually a JavaScript calculator where you say like, I have this much for my housing costs, I have this much for my utilities, this much for food, my internet costs this much. You know, you put in a bunch of your expenses and then you click a button and it magically outputs how much you should charge as a freelancer. I used them when I got started. They're really popular. There's dozens of them all over the place that continuously pop up. In this article, Curtis kind of talks about the problem with them. And I actually feel the same way. I would much rather have someone come to me and ask, like, you know, what should I do? Like, here's my services. What should I charge, like, rate-wise, than have someone go to a pricing calculator? Because the big thing is the pricing calculator relies on your cost, you know, your cost as a person and as a business to, you know, be around. And your clients really don't care about that. I mean, they care about the value they're getting, you know, both like what you're going to do to improve their revenue or decrease their costs. And so what it costs you to provide the service is pretty inconsequential. And the fact that a lot of our expenses as freelancers is very minute, very tiny, it really makes these calculators really, really out of whack. I mean, they might give you an idea of like the minimum you can charge, but anyways, check out Curtis's post. It's very good. And like I said, I agree with it. I think there's some more things, more problems around it, but I'm not going to get into that right now, or this will be an hour-long podcast. So the next link is how smart agencies can improve lead generation. This is from the BidSketch blog. In case you don't know what it is, lead generation is kind of the activity, the process that kind of gets like anonymous or people you don't know to kind of go to the first part of your sales funnel. So like in my case, lead generation is everything that happens before someone actually contacts me through like my contact form or calling me or email or that sort of thing. So improving your lead generation would actually bring you more leads, which of the percentage you close would end up in more clients. And so it's a really important activity to do. A lot of people I know don't even have an actual process for lead generation. So it's really a good thing to improve and work on. This article actually, it's not just for agencies. I actually use these, I call them different things, but I use these exact tactics for myself, and it's just me here. So definitely check it out. And if you have questions about how this works, you know, feel free to email me. Like I'm pretty public with how this lead generation thing works on my site with Little Stream Software. So if you're just getting started freelancing or you're restarting your freelance business, maybe you're coming off, you know, a break, or, you know, you were hired as an employee for a while, it can be kind of hard to get going on the right path. You know, you have the freedom to do many different things in your business, but you have to kind of know, is this thing that I'm going to do right now, is this actually going to help me get towards my goal of, you know, building my business, launching it and actually having clients, or is this a distraction? So in this training resource that I wrote, I basically walk you through going from, I want to start freelancing, but I don't really know anything about it, all the way through to you have a marketing system, you have marketing material, marketing assets already out there. you're attracting clients, and hopefully you've actually booked a client. And so this entire system takes about 30 days to go through. It's just one step-by-step guide. You can do multiple ways, but this is the one I found worked for me, and it worked for a lot of other freelancers who have come through and gotten advice from me or got this product and actually launched their business. So in the article, "What is Bookkeeping for a Freelance Front-End Developer?" Alan Branch from Less Accounting writes about, you know, the basics of bookkeeping for freelancers. It's specific for front-end developers, but any freelancer can really kind of use this. He outlines, you know, what the IRS cares about as far as revenue, expenses, what are tax write-offs, what can't be tax write-offs, that sort of thing. And I've known Alan for several years now. He got started as a freelancer, and Less Accounting is bookkeeping software. And so, you know, he kind of approaches this. He has he's been doing freelancing, and he also knows the bookkeeping side. And so it's a great article, especially if you have no clue about taxes and you keep your receipts in a shoebox. This will kind of help you figure out like what you can do. The feast and famine cycle is kind of a cycle that happens where you either have too much work to do or you don't have enough. And the problem is they get into like a feedback loop where you actually don't, when you're too busy, you don't do the things that actually help you stay busy. And so you end up having the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. In this article, Feast or Famine, Jared Drysdale collected the advice from several experienced consultants about how they prevent the famine. It's interesting because you can see that different people use different strategies, and you can actually see a couple of the strategies where the limitations are. Like, for example, if you depend heavily on referrals, how you are pretty out of control. Like you might have enough work and it might work for years on end, but at any time that can dry up. And how the consultant talked about how he was kind of anxious, like what if the email referrals stopped and he just had to go find work on his own. So in this article, it's 10 practical ways to create a work-life balance. Work-life balance kind of, I don't know, the terminology is kind of grating to me. I don't think that that's actually a true concept. But the interesting thing, this article kind of goes through, like if you're feeling overwhelmed, or if you're looking for things to improve or to tweak your process, there's some good stuff in here. I personally would ignore like the work-life balance and just say like, is there good advice in here? And there's actually a few good things in here, especially, you know, if you're looking about, you know, making some changes next year. So this next article is a mouthful. It's the non-scuzzy and totally true story of how I earned six figures in 12 months by mastering the hidden Elance economy. The author, Danny, basically makes a pretty compelling case for freelancers to work on Elance, even if they are like the, you know, first world, very high end rates type of freelancer, you know, like not what you would typically think of who would be on Elance, where it's a very cost conscious clients. The big key to his process, though, is to kind of work in the hidden Elance economy, he calls it, where you're not really part of the regular visible market. It's an interesting way because I steer people away from Elance or sites like Elance just because I think it's two or three reasons. And, you know, it's like it's very race to the bottom. It's very hard to stand above people and actually like, you know, show that you're great at what you do versus like the other 1,000 people. But his strategy actually outlines like some different ways you can work around that to make it so Elance works for you. Myself, I could actually see this kind of being a backup system. So like if I don't have enough clients, I could use this Elance technique to maybe have some more here and there. Not as filler, but just as like short-term, like, you know, bridge the gaps between stuff. So this past year, I've sent more cold emails than probably I have in, you know, several years. The big reason is because I've been trying to build an actual sales process. So like I was talking about earlier with like the lead generation going into like a sales conversation and then either winning the client or declining the client or whatever. Part of that is in the past, I work with very few clients and work long-term with them. And so it's been difficult to build a sales process just because my volume is so low with that. So I've been doing a lot more kind of, you know, sending cold emails, doing some cold prospecting just to kind of have a higher volume and run people through my system as I'm building out this process. One big component of it was having a follow-up email. And I actually have a sequence of three or four emails that I'll send and potentially more depending on the client. And the follow-up emails are like, they're the key to the thing. I mean, I was, like I said in the training yesterday, probably 80 or 90% of my actual clients, that like the people I actually land and that are paying me money, they've had some kind of follow-up during the sales process, whether it's at the beginning, in the middle, maybe I sent them a contract and kept following up on a signature. So having kind of knowing what a follow-up is and actually crafting them, especially for cold emails where, you know, you don't actually know the person you're sending it to very well, it's a great thing to get into. And this article is a good introduction to that. Then on the Freelancer Show, Kai Davis was on where he talked about productized consulting and how he used that to kind of in a way like get rid of proposals for his business. I don't know if it's completely or if it's like toned it down, like almost out of the way, because I think he still does some custom consulting. But we covered a huge range of topics, like, you know, what deciding on what kind of service to offer, marketing, and how to actually, you know, incrementally improve your productized consulting over time. So, I mean, there's been a lot of productized consulting stuff out there now. This is one of the really good ones. And if you're thinking about getting into it, I would recommend listening to this, especially for the getting started approach to it. Hope you enjoyed this issue and you got some value out of it. Let me know what you think both of the newsletter and the podcast. Like always, you can send me an email by replying to the newsletter. You can @reply me on Twitter. I'm edavis and the number 10. And then I'll be back again next week with the latest news and resources for freelancers. Take care.